college, with the help of some daydream-inspiring Latin and Greek classes, I continued to believe that the epic tribulations of the Red Sox were part of my personal mythos. That's the kind of thinking a 21-year-old steeped in Homer and a hatred of the Blue Jays gets himself into when he's not having much luck with the ladies. So, when the Red Sox lost Game 7 of the American League Championship Series to the Yankees in 2003, it made perfect sense that I'd also get dumped, as though the universe, or Zeus, had constructed a diorama of coincidental suffering in which I was fated to reside, a tiny paper doll of a man left holding his drooping pennant. That school year, I got into experimental theater and Irish literature, the balms of the despondent. I stayed up late writing Yeatsian ballads about collarbones, the wind, and the way collarbones look in the wind, while I sometimes let myself read rumors about a new relief pitcher the Red Sox were courting. It was mostly a long, lonely off-season. Then, when I was 22, the Red Sox finally won the World Series. "Can you believe it?" shouted Castiglione. I couldn't. I'd just moved to Ohio to start a teaching job, but I'd flown into Boston for the clinching game, and after the last out, I ran around Kenmore Square hugging anonymous MRFs. This was it. I'd graduated college, I had employment, and most importantly, I had a new girlfriend whose over-the-shoulder glance felt like a late-inning rally. All this coinciding with the Red Sox winning it all, right when I'd stopped being a kid. As I got older, and got married to the over-the-shoulder glancer, I grew out of my Red Sox obsession, and away from overwrought baseball metaphors. I couldn't stomach the five-hour games or the talk radio bluster that accompanied early-season fiascos, the life-and-death attitude that had seemed necessary as a pre-2004 Red Sox fan felt a little ridiculous, especially after my daughter Natalie was born. We bought her the obligatory Born to be a Red Sox fan onesie. I pointed out David Ortiz on TV as she spat up strained beets, and the Red Sox won the series again that year. But my wee hour's heart wasn't in it. As whole seasons passed me by, I missed my baseball obsession, the impracticality of memorizing on-base percentages, and I missed listening to the games on the radio as I had as a dreamy kid, when it was all right to be kept up nights by a thing that was supposed to be fun. But I found that feeling again where almost no one else was looking. On a field in Iowa where the players heard baseball too and imagined the game and hoped like hell it would give them something beautiful. In 2012, I traveled to the Beep Baseball World Series to write a clever magazine story on something peculiar, blind guys playing sports. But as Lupe Perez of Austin, Texas, dove in the mud for a beeping baseball he couldn't see, and as Rock Kuo of Taipei, Taiwan, worked with his team's pitcher to make solid contact at the plate, this game became more than a novelty. By the late innings, I felt the old childhood single-mindedness again. The Austin Blackhawks trailed their rivals from Asia, but that seemed right. Coming back was the best part, after all. And as I watched guys who'd mostly grown up without baseball, I saw that they could still approach the game as a kid could. Maybe they had retinoblastoma or Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy. Maybe they'd lost their sight in a botched operation or a hunting accident. But whatever the circumstances, when they put their hands on each other's shoulders and lined up to take the field together, they were baseball players, trash-talking, back-slapping, and loving the fight. So I decided to go with them.